MDN TV, the podcast. Be abreast with now. Never miss a thing with MDN TV, the podcast. We love to keep you in the present with diverse goodies from secular and non-secular subjects of global interest. Join us. Grab more from these series. Listen to our podcasts. The undeniable choice.
It's sundown. The day has just begun. Good morning, good morning, good morning, good morning, everybody. Yes, this is MDN Movies. Change your view now. Only on MDN TV, the podcast. And I am Major Daughter. Welcome, 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 everybody from around the world. Go ahead and share this broadcast as many times as possible. Share this program, share this episode, this podcast. Tell everybody is happening, and we're talking film. We're talking movies. Look, how does movies reflect society? How does TV show reflect society? That's exactly what we will be talking about. And my guest is Bo Roberts, joining me all the way from LA, the USA. Look, momentarily, he will be talking to us and taking us through. Are you a filmmaker? Are you a director? Are you an aspiring filmmaker? Oh, you've got to be part of this episode momentarily. Bo will be joining me right after this.
MDN TV, the podcast. Be abreast with now. Never miss a thing with MDN TV, the podcast. We love to keep you in the present with diverse goodies from secular and non-secular subjects of global interest. Join us. Grab more from these series. Listen to our podcasts. The undeniable
choice. The undeniable choice indeed for today is Bo Roberts, joining us all the way from LA, Los Angeles. Thanks a gazillion times, Roberts, for your time and wisdom. The mic swings to you now. Roberts?
Yeah, no, I am here. Thank you so much for having me. And yeah, greetings from LA, or also known as Hollywood.
Yeah, greetings from Hollywood. Now, tell our global viewers, who is Bo Roberts?
Yeah, so I am Bo Roberts. And yeah, I spent about 10 years working as a model and actor on camera. And then probably about maybe 5 to 6 years ago is when I really began exploring life behind the camera. And after shooting maybe 15 short films this past year, I went ahead and shot my first full-length feature movie.
Wow, incredible. So how did you get started into film?
So I got started in film very shortly after I got involved in print modeling. I started seeing audition, like things to read for and roles coming up, and looking for various castings as a model and stuff. But yeah, and then I began coming across acting auditions. And at the time, I thought I was just a typical person, just thinking, oh, it would be cool to be on TV. But I had actually had a pretty big interest in psychology ever since I was, in seventh grade. I think it was. And then in college, I was actually majoring in psychology. So going into acting, it was really interesting how that interest in psychology came back around, because I would read a script and make sense of how I would react and respond in certain environments and situations. And that's what really got me into acting. And then I went to New York City and began going to acting school. And once I felt confident in some of the short films I had done as an actor and school for about 2.5 years, I went ahead and moved out to Los Angeles.
You were born for this, I must say. So are you a self-taught or YouTube taught director or Google University director? Bo?
So I am self-taught. I like to tell people I'm a graduate, and I'm currently doing ongoing studies on YouTube University for filmmaking. A lot of people go to film school, and there's, I'm sure, you know, plenty, you know, that you can learn. And from what I gather, the networking and the people that you meet in film school, that's a major plus for the reason for going. But for me, acting was still at the forefront, but the more time that I spent holding a camera, the more I enjoyed it. So I just slowly started watching one YouTube video after another, and like every day as I'm having breakfast, that's when I'm spending about 20 minutes to 60 minutes watching stuff on YouTube. And I would do it at about a 2 to 3 month stint, to where for 3 months I'm only studying lighting, and then I switch over to camera movements, and then I would jump over to post-production techniques and so on and so forth. And then that evolved into me hanging out with my acting friends from acting school and just shooting really goofy short films. But I began treating those short films as a homework assignment, to the tune that I just researched lighting for the past 3 months. So let's shoot a short film where I have to use light to make it look like it's midnight outside. So that's one way that, you know, being a self-taught filmmaker really helped me, was giving myself homework assignments.
You are changing the game, I must say. And here you are in Hollywood doing it right from YouTube University. Who would have thought? Now, let's talk about your inspiration. What inspired you to go for your dream in filmmaking, in directing? And why did you just think of YouTube instead of school, university, and other traditional schools that we are used to? Bo?
Right, yeah. So the reason I chose the non-traditional route, or just self-teaching, was because I was creating this stuff simply out of the joy of doing so. I still, at that time, I viewed myself as an actor and a model, that so my career was on screen. But when I was at home just hanging out, I couldn't just sit still. So I had to continuously keep learning. And I had a photography camera, and that became a great instrument of for me to kind of document my journey living in Milan, going to Europe for 3 months, and going to New York City, and then moving out to Los Angeles. I had my photography camera with me the whole time. So researching how I can take better photos with that, and then hanging out with friends and just shooting stuff with really no intention. It started off just doing it strictly for the pure enjoyment of it. But with that in mind, I always like to put my best foot forward. So instead of going to a traditional acting school, a traditional filmmaking school, I was just going on YouTube just so I can make these, you know, fun, goofy short films with my friends look just a tiny bit better.
Now, you have created an independent movie. You have made an independent movie. Would you tell us about that experience? And was it your very first one, Bo?
Yes. I'm not calling this my directing debut, because the parameters I was under to make this movie, it was definitely not the best circumstances. It was right on the heels of COVID and coming out of lockdown. And it was me and one other crew member on set to make this movie. And I had about $1,600 to work with to make the movie. So that's why I'm saying this is my first full-length movie. But I wouldn't really classify it as my director's debut, just because there's a lot of ways that I wanted to do things, and it just, you know, didn't happen because of budget primarily. But yeah, I just got to a point to where even a lack of budget, that wasn't going to stop me. It wasn't going to slow me down. I just had to make sense of how I can work around it and keep it moving.
And you say,
yeah.
And you say your budget was $1,600. Are you saying that's all you used to make this movie?
Yes. So for me, I'm very foundational in my approach to filmmaking, where a lot of filmmakers, they say, oh, I have to have this amazing set of lenses to put on my camera because that's going to really raise the image quality and it's going to do, you know, it's going to fix everything. And that's not really how my brain operates. Every time I go into a camera store, I force myself to buy one thing that I don't want to buy. So of course, you know, looking at the new lenses or like a new stand for my camera and the lights, that's the fun stuff to play around with. But for me, I was like, I need to invest in buying sandbags and light stands and clips and, you know, rope and just all of the stuff that is necessary to really make a production happen. But it's not the fun stuff that people like to shop for. It's not the fun stuff to spend money on. But for me, every time I went into a camera store for the past 6 years, even if I just had to go in and buy something simple, I had to make sense of buying something I didn't really care to buy. So like tape, you always need a lot of tape on set. So just doing stuff like that. So year after year, while shooting my short films and buying gear that, you know, I didn't, that wasn't the fun stuff to do. After about 5 years, I accumulated a pretty interesting amount of knowledge and interesting amount of gear that all of a sudden I no longer had to go out and rent gear and make sense of doing all of this stuff because now I already owned it. So that's one way I can see I really helped myself on keeping costs down. I own my camera, the lenses, my lights, my lighting stands. I've done 15 short films again, just for the pure joy of doing it. But all of a sudden, instead of hiring somebody to do the assembly edit of syncing all of the audio to all of the video, I was the one that did that for my movie. So a lot of the responsibility fell on my shoulders on making stuff happen opposed to spending money on it. But since, you know, I spent so long just goofing off with my friends, I was prepared to make that happen.
Wow, amazing, amazing. Now, tell us about your aha moment in making this film. What was your biggest aha moment in this experience, Bo?
Yeah. So I would say my aha moment on making my movie, which the name of it, by the way, is called The Great Awakening. Yes. So the way that I had my aha moment with The Great Awakening was I decided to make my quote unquote COVID movie without it being a COVID movie. I made sense that a lot of people were just going to put some kind of content out that is directly connected with becoming infected with COVID-19, or maybe yes, vaccine turns people into a monster. Maybe lockdown is mass enslavement of the human race, and just, you know, it seems like they would take a very direct COVID situation and just run with it. Whereas for me, my aha moment came when I thought of a documentary that I had seen, and actually my Facebook memory told me that 11 years ago yesterday was when I first watched that documentary, and it's called Nightmares in Red, White, and Blue. And this documentary, it talks about how you have these iconic horror movie people from West Craven to George A. Romero, and the list goes on and on with who shows up on camera. And it's all of these guys talking about how they looked at society and interpreted, okay, this is what's happening in society. What's the symbolic meaning of it? And how do I transfer that on the screen? So some examples would be in the 50s, that was very close to post-World War II. So a lot of horror movies had an atomic bomb apocalypse scare.
Yes.
And then when you jump to and then when you jump to the 60s, now you have the Summer of Love, drug experimentation, and Woodstock. So a lot of horror movies had like the pot smoking hippie that kidnaps Daddy's little angel, and that's, you know, a 60s horror movie. But then you get to the 70s, and that's when Woodstock and the Summer of Love ended. We have in this country is a huge thing dealing with the draft for Vietnam. We had Watergate and the Nixon scandal that happened, and this country just had really, it was a rough time, and the country had a bad taste in its mouth. So that's when horror movies turned ultra violent, and you have movies like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre that came out. So I acknowledge what that documentary was telling me. And I said, okay, so instead of my COVID movie being about getting COVID, I'm like, what does 2020 mean to me?
Yes.
Try and summarize it. So COVID comes out, and then lockdown is mentioned, but not just for here, but like all over the world, and like countries that we never agree with on topics, all of a sudden, everybody agrees that going into lockdown is a good idea. We had a very turbulent election year over here, and then the Black Lives Matter movement and subsequent riots that came from that. And then also the CIA released over 10,000 documents confirming interactions with UFOs. And that was not even, it wasn't even trending on social media when it came out. Like nobody cared. So it was just one crazy situation after another to where the headlines were so out of control. It was like, this doesn't even seem real. So trying to make sense of what was coming next in 2020, I couldn't do it. So to summarize the year, I would say one word, and it would be uncertainty. So all of a sudden, uncertainty became my common thread for my movie and the story that I was wanting to tell, to where when you watch it, you understand what's happening, but the way I decided to deliver and present the scene, things don't really add up. And trying to make sense of what's coming next in the movie, I think I did a very good job, and I'm confident at saying you're not going to anticipate what's coming next in the movie from one scene to the next.
It's a must.
I think so. So the entire agenda of creating the story, the way I shot it actually on set, the way it was put together in post-production, the sole intent of every aspect of putting this project together is to force people back into that uncertain emotion that we all experienced in 2020. And doing that, that's what makes it a, like, my COVID movie.
Would you say movies are prophetic? And why would you say that?
Sorry, the speaker kind of messed up.
Would you say movies are prophetic, meaning they foretell what is coming or what is happening?
In my movie, it's called The Great Awakening.
And
when you think about what The Great Awakening is, it means something different to you. A litany of different people, to where, you know, and the first account of me reading about it is more about the Christian Crusades, where it's like basically convert to Christianity or we're going to kill you. That was
yes,
the, precisely. That, that type, yeah, that was that great awakening. But then when you get, and you've had multiple great awakenings that have happened. And then in the '70s, that's when you, or in the '60s and seventies, that's when you had a huge influx of a lot of variations on religion and thoughts and practices and becoming more spiritual, but not necessarily religious. That's when that did. And now, in today's age, when people talk about the Great Awakening, I think more times than not, people think about the realm of opening your third eye, ascending into the fourth dimension, and just having a greater total understanding on stuff. So with that in mind, there's a segment in my movie where you have a character's soul leave her body, and then it shows them flying through a tunnel with the light at the end of the tunnel. And that's in the movie because I wanted to, you know, provoke the thought on what does that mean? Well, yes. I believe nature and nurture come into play, where if you're religious, you might think that's an interaction with God or going to heaven. If you're agnostic or if you're spiritual, you may say it's astral projection or an out of body experience. And if you're, atheist, I generalize that with the science-based community. And in the science community, I discovered that when you have a near-death experience, blood begins draining from the brain, preparing for death. And when that happens, it's very similar to running a car engine without enough oil in it. It makes it run hard and ragged. And this action, it throws the mind into an altered state of consciousness. And people who have survived that near-death experience and have come back, they... some of them mentioned seeing a bright light and felt like they were flying through a tunnel. So you have one event taking place, but depending on how these people were raised and what they believe in, they have an extremely different opinion on what that means to them. So for me, titling my movie The Great Awakening, it's supposed to provoke that thought on, okay, what happens after death, and what, you know, kind of what's the point of us being here in the first place, and so on and so forth. But then it's kind of a sub layer. That was my way of expressing my thought that I wish people could get back to having the ability to agree to disagree. Just because we have different thoughts and opinions, that should not make us, mortal, like villains and stuff. Like we should be more cooperative and nice to each other, just because the way I view it is we're all just humans trying to make sense of what reality is and however we were raised and the way that we make sense of the world around us. We're doing it from a survival tactic vantage point, to where we're just crafting a reality that's most comfortable to us as a single person. So with that in mind, when we encounter somebody that has a different opinion, I'm like, it'd be nice if we could, all be nice to each other again.
Yeah. Easier said than done. Right.
Right.
Now you say films, TV shows, they all reflect society. How? Could you please explain?
That documentary, Nightmares in Red, White, and Blue, I think it does a great job on explaining how they do that. Because, of course, you do have TV shows that don't really reflect society too much. But, you definitely do have a lot that do, where some of the more common analogies would be a zombie movie. A zombie movie typically talks about, like, the masses, or if you hear people refer to a lot of humans as being sheep or sheeple, to me that's kind of the zombie mentality, to where they're just kind of, the thing, the lights are on, but nobody's home. Like you just have people just kind of going through life, not like they're alive, but they're not really experiencing it.
Yeah.
And So it seems like zombie movies, it's very, it's calling out that, that group of the population. It's been very interesting to see just how things have changed going from, take James Bond, for instance. James Bond always came across in a very particular way. Mm-hmm. And now we've had the hashtag Me Too movement take place. Yes. And then the next Bond movie that comes out, all of a sudden, James Bond, he is appreciative. Like when he's shown a gadget and he's putting the watch on, he's like, oh, thank you. You did a great job with this. And instead of the roles being reversed, all of a sudden now it's James Bond being pushed up against the wall, having his shirt torn open instead of him, taking off the woman's dress. Like, I noticed that a lot of things that you would see James Bond and how he would be in the older movies in a post-hashtag Me Too world, all of a sudden, a lot of those roles got reversed. And I can definitely see how some projects, they're paying attention to what's happening in the mass public opinion.
Yes.
But then you have other movies, back to the zombie movies, to where they're more reflective on society as a whole. And then, you just have different, different characters and different roles that come out, like, for whatever reason and however it happened. But apparently, in today's age, you do not want to be named Karen. That's just something that's, it's now like considered a derogatory term to call somebody, oh, she's behaving like a Karen. And have you heard that before?
Yes.
Yeah, so with that in mind, that's just something that, however that came to be in pop culture, I have no idea. But it's enough in pop culture now that if I'm watching a show, and if you have that woman that's just nobody likes because she's so just bad and just kind of evil in her own way and is always causing trouble, I'm not surprised when her character name is Karen. Like you have filmmakers that have acknowledged this and they've totally just ran with it. So it's very interesting to see what parts of society filmmakers acknowledge, gravitate towards, and put into their work.
I'm really looking forward to a day where Hollywood will take on what is currently at play with politics in the U.S. and really bring that into a very serious picture and provoke our thoughts and our minds, because I've seen different things playing out in the movie world. But we want to see politics, really, like what is currently happening, and the story of the former president and the current, you know what I mean, Bo?
Yes, I do. And it's very interesting because I've come across one filmmaker and I looked up his work and he came across as being very, very conservative.
Yes.
And he made a couple movies that were like, that were hyper politically geared in the subject matter. And he was having a lot of trouble having any channels pick his content up. Like, nobody really wanted to run it. And he felt like, oh, it's the damn libs out in California who were trying to silence him and his message and stuff. And it's been very interesting to see that. But why nobody's, currently developing a project or something. I mean, there might be one in the works, because with what's happened in the United States in the last you know, 5 years, or even, you know, just January 6th, yes, and what happened, yes, in Washington, D.C. I'm like, you have all you need. Just take the year, you know, from halfway through 2020 and then halfway through 2021, just that capsule in time. You have plenty of stuff to make a movie with, that, you know, would be very politically driven. So why somebody hasn't done that yet, I don't really know, but it's, yeah. And, I mean, it's interesting.
Script is right there, but I get a feeling that movie makers avoid the political space. They avoid playing, or I'm not sure, is it because of some intimidation, or could there be something behind it? I'm just asking this on the side, by the way, and if you're not comfortable answering it, it's okay, Bo.
No, I got you. And yeah, and to me, it's like we're trying to make sense of why nobody's doing it. So it's, to me, it's a topic I would actually love to jump in and kind of brainstorm on, because I honestly don't really have an answer for it. maybe intimidation could come into it, because of course, the way that a lot of people, when they think of the far right, hyper conservative type of person, I think one thing that comes to mind is, you know, there's a certain level of aggression, and that they own weapons, and, you know, and it's just, it goes from kind of thinking about a person who's, you know, far right Republican. And then I think maybe some people will turn that image into more of a caricature of itself, and what they think about, oh, this, what this person might be capable of. So yeah, maybe the person is like intimidating theirself just thinking about the, you know, the repercussions if they come out with something that's very polarizing.
Now, you were bullied at school and you ended up on the pages of GQ. How does that happen? I mean, was it because of your looks? Was it, I mean, what can you share that will help other children who are currently facing the same issues today, facing the same kind of bullying? Because bullying is bullying. It doesn't matter where you are in the world. It's alive everywhere. Bo?
Yeah. So from kindergarten until 2 years after high school, I went through intensive speech therapy. And I've always had this very, you know, blunt mentality to where if someone's trying to bully me, I would, you know, I would be ready to fight them if they wanted. So, and with me being extremely athletic, people would, you know, tease me to a point, but then, you know, once it would get too bad, that's when they would usually let off. But, you know, sometimes, like apparently one time I said the word bananas, and I said it weird, apparently, and it kept turning into this thing to where the entire football team passed a helmet around collecting money, and they tried to pay me off. And the way I view that situation is like public embarrassment or public humiliation, to where, yes, it's like, you know, I felt like a freak show on display, where, you know, it's like these, you know, 80 to 90 kids are just wanting to hear me, you know, try to talk. And, you know, so it definitely put me on the spot. And yeah, it's something that was very much in my brain. With that in mind, I could have graduated high school and began working at the family truck driving company. But I didn't. And I would have been communicating through emails and not really having to talk to people. But I, you know, instead pursued a career where a camera's in front of me and a microphone is 2 feet away from my face, listening to everything I have to say. Mm. So instead of kind of running from it, I'm like, just who cares? Live the life that you want to do. And honestly, the way that I really helped build my confidence up with my voice was when I lived in Manhattan. once or twice per week, I would go out and sing karaoke. And I'm not referencing the karaoke bar to where you spend money and then you're in like a small room by yourself. I would specifically go to a karaoke bar where I would sing to everybody in the bar. So all of a sudden, the years and years of being teased for how I speak, all of a sudden I'm standing in front of 50 to 60 people and I'm trying to sing to them. And that gave me the ability that, okay, this is embarrassing. I don't want to do it, but I, you know, and then after I would sing the song, I'm like, I'm still here. Nobody's laughing at me, whatever. So then that's when I really put in my head that, you know, the people that were teasing me, I'm like, they have their own issues. And the older I get, the more apparent it is that anytime I encounter a bully or someone that has bully mentality, there's always something they're dealing with to where they're being tormented. Yes. And the only way that they know how to make sense of it is to kind of pass it on as maybe it's a way to deflect the situation, or if maybe they're not feeling empowered because of the situation they're in. So if they have to kind of beat up on somebody else to make them feel good. But yeah, so it really got me to the point where when somebody would attempt to bully me, I now no longer view it as a character flaw that I have, but it's more like, yeah, you picked out something that I do have an issue with and you're trying to make fun of me. But the reality of the situation is you have your own demons that you have to deal with. And yeah, that's having that mentality has really helped me.
Wow. Incredible. So what's next? Where to from here, Bo?
Yeah. So as far as what's next, I honestly don't really know,
are you thinking about that?
Maybe that might have to be in my next script. I have about 10 feature film scripts. And I selected the next one that I'm really going to move ahead with developing. So I have my beat points, the character backstories, my mood board. I have everything done. And I don't know, I'm on maybe page 30 of the actual script. So, yeah, I'm just going to go ahead and flesh that out. And that would be the next one I would love to shoot in. And it is my modern day interpretation of the epic poem of Dante's Inferno.
Wow, incredible. So yes, you can go.
Oh, sorry. No, that's it.
So how can our listeners really find out more about you and our viewers? How do we get hold of these, your short films that you have produced, Bo?
Yeah, so if you go on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, anywhere that I actually have a social media handle, it is going to be at Mr. Bo Roberts. So MRBOR, and then autofill should take care of the rest. People can directly message me on Instagram. That is where I'm most active on. And my YouTube does have some of my short films on there. And, in the interest of coming across maybe a bit more professional, I don't have all of my short films on there because some of them are pretty wacky and pretty out there.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have come to the end of today's broadcast, but the conversation continues on the social media pages. Make sure you check Bo Roberts out. Connect. Look, Bo, thanks a gazillion times for your time and all that you have shared. I mean, you are simply amazing, and I believe you're just born for this. You can't just be a self-taught filmmaker, film director. It must have been in you all along. Your parting shots? Your parting shots, your last words.
Parting thoughts. I would say if you're wanting to do something, just go out and do it. My first short film, I shot with my photography camera. Everybody was shooting 4K. I was still shooting 1080p. I didn't even have a microphone, but my camera had a built-in microphone to it. Half of the first short film I made was not in focus because I didn't have a screen that I could really look at to look at everything to make sure it's in focus. But that was my starting point. 5 years after that, I got a little bit better, a little bit better, a little bit better. And now my first full-length movie I made for $1,600 and it's been picked up by Tubi TV and it's currently being onboarded by Amazon Prime. So hopefully in maybe 2 weeks, it will be available on there. But yeah, I started off with literally just a photography camera. And that's how, you know, my filming career behind the camera really started for me. So don't make any excuses if you don't have the right gear or, you know, if it's filmmaking or whatever it is you want to do in life. Trust me, you'll find plenty of reasons to not do it. You just have to find a few reasons that, you know, that makes you passionate enough to really want to pursue it and just stick with it.
Indeed. Ladies and gentlemen, Beau Roberts.
MDN TV, the podcast. Be abreast with now. Never miss a thing with MDN TV, the podcast. We love to keep you in the present with diverse goodies from secular and non-secular subjects of global interest. Join us. Grab more from these series. Listen to our podcasts. The undeniable choice.
MDN TV, the podcast, is still the undeniable choice. That was Beau Roberts. Now, if you want to get into filmmaking, directing, enroll yourself on YouTube University. It's that simple to all our viewers and listeners around the world. Well done.
MDN Talk Radio. The mic swings to you. At MDN Talk Radio, the conversation is upbeat with life-enhancing chats moderated by personalities that matter. Exclusive conversations to keep our radio community interactive is with you now. Log on from the comfort of your couch or take us along in your palm as you go. Hear us. The undeniable choice.